love what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Life After the Game with your host, Lamar Campbell. What happens after the game wraps up, either when the day is done or the professional career is done? We'll take a look at what your favorite athletes are doing when they aren't in the game. Now, here is your host, Lamar Campbell.
Hello and welcome back to Life After the Game. I'm your host, Lamar Campbell, broadcasting to you live this Monday, June 6th in beautiful Atlanta, Georgia. Hope everyone had a great Memorial Day weekend. I know it has been a barn burner here in Atlanta, Georgia. Very hot, very uncomfortable, but ATL, I love you and I'm not going anywhere. So we had a really great weekend this weekend. I had a chance to go back and visit my hometown of professional football, Detroit, Michigan. I had a great weekend. We're going to go ahead and follow up with some of the events I was able to attend in Detroit, Michigan, and also some of the great sports events that happened this weekend as well. First of all, we have some sad news. Definitely want to give our prayers up to Hall of Fame running back John Henry Johnson, who died at 81 Friday in Tracy, California. Mr. Johnson was a four-year bowl player and inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1987 after a 14-season career. He played three with the San Francisco 49ers from 1954 to 1956, and teaming with running backs Joe Perry and Hugh McKinley and quarterback Y.A. Tittle in the million-dollar backfield. It's the only full-house backfield to have all four members of the Hall of Fame. And he was also on the Lions winning title team in 1957, as well as played for a couple of years in Pittsburgh, as well as Houston Oilers. Definitely prayers go up to Mr. John Henry Johnson and his family, and also a former teammate of mine, NFL great Barry Sanders, actually lost his father last week. We heard news of it while I was in Detroit, so definitely prayers goes up to UB. The Lion family is definitely praying for you and your family in this time of need. Today's guest is going to be Mr. Malcolm Johnson. Let me tell you a little bit about Malcolm Johnson. Malcolm Johnson was a four-year NFL vet. He was a graduate of Notre Dame, and he is now the vice president of Bank of America and Merrill Lynch's Los Angeles Commercial Real Estate Group. This is a great position for him to hold at such a young age. He's actually also been named to Real Estate's 40 Under 40, so I'm sure me and him will have plenty of real estate conversations brought to you as the conversation goes along. If you have any questions, feel free to give us a call at 1-888-346-9144. Feel free to tweet me at Life After T Game or email me at Lamar@lifeafterthegame.com. Well, as you know, today's episode is called Tackling Education, and I'm very profound on education. I believe it's the cornerstone of all success story that you may hear of today, whether it's personal education, collegiate education, or just education wherever you can get it from, because everyone has a story to tell. Everyone has something to teach you. And I am a big believer in always being a sponge until the day that you leave this earth. So we definitely want to focus on education. I actually had a chance to get back to Detroit before the banquet on Friday night, the Gridiron Greats banquet that we attended. I actually had a chance to go up to Detroit with a great young man by the name of Stephen Stafford. If you don't know who Stephen Stafford is, he's actually a young man, a Detroit native, and he's actually now a 15-year-old Morehouse Junior. That's Morehouse University. Listeners, Morehouse University. He is a 15-year-old Morehouse junior. He actually attended Morehouse as the youngest freshman ever to start Morehouse, beating out Dr. Martin Luther King, who was currently the youngest ever to enter the Morehouse school as well. And we actually had a chance to speak to some children on Friday as far as the importance of education. And Steve is a phenomenal young man, and he had a lot to say about getting the education early. Had a great conversation with Stephen's mom, and me and Stephen's mom spoke on how she realized that her son was special at such a young age, how she was always very intent on educating him and not being led to believe that he was learning something in the school system that he could not have been learning at home. Now, one thing I do believe in is that, you know, the school system is just going to be that. It is a system. If you look at the transportation system, it's a government system. You look at the housing project system, it's a government system. If you look at the public schools, unfortunately, yeah, that's a government system. So the government systems are going to be what they're going to be. And one of the great discussions that we had is that, you know, the first thing they labeled Stephen with was that he was actually a disturbance. Well, the fact that he was a disturbance just meant that he was not challenged. And it really got me to thinking on how can we actually input into our NFL players, our NBA players, our Major League Baseball players, the importance of education and what it means to them, not only during their careers, but also after their careers are over. One of the things that I told the children on Friday, which I always tell the kids and make it a point to tell them, is that all you see a lot of times are the guys after practice doing interviews, and you see the gentlemen on Sunday playing on Sundays and living the spoils of the NFL life. But 80% of all NFL players spend that time in the classroom. And some of the greatest players that I've also been around also were some of the smartest players as well. And that's something that a lot of kids do not understand. So hopefully if you're out there listening today, please, please call in with your opinions. Please call in with your questions. We're going to have a great show today. Again, that phone number is 1-888-346-9144. Again, 1-888-346-9144. Well, after we had a chance to have a great day speaking with the children on Friday, I had a chance to go to the Gridiron Greats benefit in Novi, Michigan, with a lot of my former Lions players and alumni, and tons of NFL greats. Had a chance to meet the wonderful Mr. Gale Sayers, had a chance to meet Mike Dicker for the first time. I actually saw some of my great teammates that were there with me, Ronald Rice, Herman Moore, Desmond Howard, even Dick LeBeau, who used to be a former Lion and a Super Bowl champion, ring as a defensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it was amazing to see the camaraderie that was there between us and how every man still talks about the same thing. The same issues that were issues in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s are still issues today. And I think we really connected and bonded based on a lot of the issues. Now, as we know, we are 86 days, 18 hours, 9 minutes, and 14 seconds in the NFL lockout. And if you do know how I had it down to the second, it's because I'm actually looking at the website right now. You can visit it at www.nfllockout.com. But we had a chance to speak to Gale Sayers about the strike, and also Michigan State's Sam Williams struck first in NFL, and then it all changed. Now, for those of you that don't know, former Michigan State defensive end Sam Williams says all of his NFL labor strife started because of him. Williams, who played with the Atlanta Falcons in 1968, called what he organized and called the first player strike in the NFL. Now, Mr. Williams had just finished a six-year run with the Lions when he joined the Falcons in 1966. He also played in the 67 season with Atlanta before retiring. Now, as you can understand, this was not met well by a lot of the ownership brass, as we are seeing today with the complications that we're having when negotiating our current NFL labor strife. However, as you can imagine, there was also some repercussions to his actions. In the first practice after the players returned, Williams had trouble finding his equipment and then got a surprise the first time that he rushed the passer. He got over the ball. They saw who he was. They immediately blew the whistle, and practice was actually over. They wouldn't even let him have any contact. They did not want him to get hurt, nor did they want him suing him. As a historian and a history major, everything comes full circle, so I'm sure to a lot of you, that sounds very, very familiar. Gale Sayers had a different take on the topic when speaking with him. Gale says some players of today's game think that they made the game what it is today, and he begged to differ. The players who are playing today are standing on the shoulders of those who made the game what it is, that played the game for peanuts. If today's players cannot help these players, shame on you. The NFL players, as we all know, last week asked a federal appeals court Friday in St. Louis to declare the lockout illegal. And a lawsuit they filed against the league was amended to include complaints from retirees. Now, Hall of Famer and former Bears coach Mike Ditka said that before the dispute can be settled to save the season, both sides must be willing to negotiate instead of trying to make legal arguments in court. You can't let egos get in the way of negotiations, Ditka said. You have to give and take. And honestly, I have to agree with Coach Ditka on this one. The sides are trying to figure out how to share the league's $9 billion annual revenue. The American public can feel sorry for either side because they can't relate. And it's something that when me and Dorsey Lemons, a guest of mine a couple of weeks ago, talked about, and it was called the locker room culture. There's a lot of things that are said in the media, that are questions that are asked by the media. And there are also certain situations where we refuse to answer certain questions certain ways. And that's just because of the respect of the locker room. And I understand, Mike Dicker, you cannot let these egos get in the way of the negotiation. If they want to fix a pension for the players, all they have to do is match what baseball does for their former players. They have the best pension in all of sports. Now, the Gridiron Grace Assistant Fund has contributed more than $2.5 million over the past 4 years to financial and medical help for retired players. And it was a great, great opportunity to be at the Gridiron Greats dinner that night. I met head surgeons, I met cardio surgeons, I met a lot of people that were actually vested in the lifestyles of retired athletes. And if you don't know the lifestyle of these retired athletes, unfortunately, there are a lot of athletes out here like the great Earl Campbell who cannot actually afford a operation to get his knees fixed. This is a man who gave everything he had to the NFL. Unfortunately, our health care plan has not been the best. I think everyone would agree that is a former player. And at the end of the day, we just want what's right for us. We want to be able to play well. We want to be able to practice well. We want to be able to live well for our families. And that's something that we're definitely going to discuss when Malcolm comes on the line. Malcolm is out there making some real estate deals, I'm sure. But he will be joining us later. We have a little bit of time. We have about 3 minutes. We go to commercial break. We're going to take a couple emails. Got an email from Sam Lyon, 25, out of Detroit. And he asked me, Lamar, what do you think about the current situation with the NFL rookies and the NFL Players Association putting on a rookie symposium? Sam, it's funny that you mentioned that. Actually, in the next segment, Malcolm and I are going to discuss actually the NFL sanctioned rookie symposium that is going to be coming up in the next couple of months, actually the end of this month, if I believe I'm correct. As an NFL rookie, I played 6 years in the NFL. However, as an undrafted free agent, I did not have an opportunity to go to the NFL rookie symposium. Only drafted players go to the NFL rookie symposium. So my rookie symposium was the first year in Detroit. The first practice in Detroit, the first season in Detroit, where I listened to everything that the veterans had to say, and I learned the game and I said how to conduct myself off the field as well from a lot of the veterans are there. However, I do feel as though it holds a lot of merit. A lot of us do speaking engagements, and if we only reach one kid after 20, I wish we would reach every kid. But if I spoke to 20 kids and I could reach one kid out of 20, then that's a success story for me, because he can go ahead and now he can be a success story to someone else. He can go ahead and spread that knowledge. He can go ahead and conduct himself in the way that he should conduct himself, and then make the responsible decisions that make him an NFL player as well. Shout out to Plaxico Burress. Welcome home. Plaxico just finished serving 20 months behind bars on a weapons charge stemming from an incident at the New York City nightclub. He has been released 3 months early for good behavior. Now, quoting Plaxico, I just want to thank God for bringing me through one of the most trying times in my life, he said to reporters outside of the prison. It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day to be reunited with my family. I want to go home and spend some quality time with them. Now, for those of you that don't remember, Burress got into trouble after he entered a Manhattan nightclub in November 2008. Now, I am not condoning what Plaxico did, but what a lot of people don't know is that it has actually that his teammate Steve Smith was actually robbed at gunpoint in front of his home in a gated community the night before. I watch a show all the time. Criminals do the dumbest things. You know, people do the dumbest things. Although he is an NFL player, I do not condone what Plaxico did. Unfortunately, he did take a club gun to the club. He did hurt himself. He did serve 2 years in prison. But everyone makes mistakes. I think Plaxico deserves a second chance, and I wish Plaxico the best. I think he's going to get a great contract from one of the teams out there in need of a wide receiver. We're getting ready to take a commercial break. When we come back, I'm going to have NFL vet, Vice President of Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, Malcolm Johnson with us on Life After the Game. Stay tuned.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Listen to Sports Talk at the Positive Pub every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel. Gil Tyree talks to sports newsmakers, playmakers, and story breakers. You, the hardcore, interactive, and novice fan, can join the show via your phone calls and emails. Sample what's good, right, and positive about the world of sports every week. Begin your week in a positive way with Sports Talk from the Positive Pub. Be here every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Do you feel the need for speed? Whatever your addiction, NASCAR, IndyCar, NHRA, Formula One, or even lawnmower racing, Pit Pass USA has got you covered. Larry Henry here, host of Pit Pass USA. I put my 30-plus years of being a motorsports broadcaster to work to bring you not only the best guests, but also the most interesting guests in racing. Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry, your front row seat to the world of racing. Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Channel. Be there or get a DNF.
Okay, sports fans, here's your opportunity to discuss football, America's favorite sport. On an annual basis, millions of people attend, watch, and listen to football, both pro and college. Ray Ellis Sports, an internet talk radio show, was developed with the fan in mind. Join host former Philadelphia Eagles and Cleveland Browns strong safety, Ray Ellis, on Voice America Sports every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific for exciting, interactive football discussions from the fans' perspective. Tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific to Ray Ellis Sports, right here on the Voice America Network. And let's talk football.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
You are tuned in to Life After the Game with your host, Lamar Campbell. If you wish to ask a question of Lamar or his guest, please call 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. Or you can send an email to lamar@lifeafterthegame.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Life After the Game. I'm your host, Lamar Campbell. As the radio promotion said, please give us a call at 1-888-346-9144 for any of your questions. Feel free to reach out to me on Twitter at LifeAfterTGame or email me at Lamar@LifeAfterTheGame.com. Well, now the commercial break over, I'd like to introduce my very special guest, Mr. Malcolm Johnson, NFL veteran and currently Vice President of Bank of America Merrill Lynch's Los Angeles Commercial Real Estate Group. How you doing today, Malcolm?
Lamar, I'm great, brother. So good to be on the show. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I appreciate it. You know you're doing big things when you have a title that long, brother. So I know a lot of people are interested in what's going on with you. But me and you had a chance to meet at a great event. We actually met at the NFL-sponsored Wharton program a couple of years ago when I was in a real estate development program there. Mm-hmm. And you came to speak to a lot of guys on the importance of education and what it means to their life after football. Now, you're a Notre Dame guy. Everybody knows right. The prestigious Notre Dame football program, but I
Is it as prestigious as the Badgers football program, or are we still working on that?
You know what? I think we may be even the last couple of years, Malcolm. I think we may even it up the last couple of years, brother.
Okay.
But also, we know about the education that Notre Dame provides you. Now, coming out of high school, how big of it? How much of the decision for education was it for you to choose the University of Notre Dame, not only for football, but academics as well?
You know what? I'm glad you asked that, because like a lot of student athletes, and I'm sure you can relate, when I was coming out of high school, the thing that was at the forefront of my mind was, where can I go and play on television every week, and what's going to give me the best opportunity to get to the National Football League? Now, luckily, I had parents in my home who guided me down a different decision-making path, but for me, the top choices would have been Notre Dame, Miami, Florida State, Ohio State, anywhere where they're playing on ABC every single Saturday. And at that time, the DCF wasn't there. So when we're going to bowl games after January 1, that's where I want to be. And my parents said, time out. You were a junior varsity player just 2 years ago. So I was a late bloomer. And I don't know if you know this, Lamar, but I was a late bloomer. Did not have a scholarship offer until the fall of my senior year. Well, you were a junior varsity athlete until just 2 years ago, and now you think the NFL is waiting on you? You're going to go where you're going to get the best education, and we'll figure out the football part second. And that's where the decision to go to a university, a Notre Dame came in.
You know what? And you hit it right on the head, Malcolm. And if you're just joining us, everyone, I have Malcolm Johnson on, NFL vet, now vice president of Bank of America, Merrill Lynch's L.A. Commercial Real Estate Group. You hit it right on the head. I only played my senior year of high school football. I actually played high school football just to stay out of trouble because I was a knucklehead kid back in those days. And when the coaches first started to come to my house, all of my aunts are educators, all teachers. Okay. When Barry Alvarez sat down on that couch, when all the coaches sat down on that couch, I might as well have not even been there. How many guys do you graduate? What is your graduation rate? Is he going to be done in 4 years? That's all they cared about. They would serve you a plate, grill you with these questions, and if you did not have any answers academically for them, they push you right out the door and tell you to take a to-go plate with you. So you hit it right on the head. Yes. That support system.
Absolutely.
That support system.
You know,
is
I don't
so big.
Want to call any university by name, so I'm going to say SEC school that shall go nameless. I can remember like it was yesterday. The coach showed up, like you said. My mom cooked a delicious meal. I said, "Mom, how come we don't eat like this at our house when the coaches aren't here?" But she cooked a delicious 4-course meal. We got peach cobbler and all that. We moved to the living room after dinner, and my dad says, "Coach, well, tell me about what the academic experience is going to be like." The coach stammers and then mentions that we're going to have 14 pairs of Nikes in whatever size and color we need. That was the end of that night right there. So my dad asked about the academics, and coach from SEC school that shall go unnamed starts to talk about how many pairs of Nikes we're going to have. And so I get it. I understand what your aunts were doing when they said, okay, see ya, when they start talking about the athletics and don't give you any info on what you're going to be doing in the classroom.
You know what? And I understand you completely. If you're just tuning in, I have Malcolm Johnson and a Velvet on with me. Malcolm, it was funny. When I first got to the NFL and guys would tell me about their college experience, colleges to remain unnamed, and all the stuff, we know with the Ohio State issue coming up right now with guys receiving benefits. And I'm sure you got to some place where guys say, oh, man, you know, it was just a football university. Classes were secondary. And I can tell you, Barry Alvarez, and I'm sure the guys up there at Notre Dame did not play that. Not only do you do your own work, but you stayed in the classroom. They had guys coming to check up to make sure you were in class. And to this day, I know as a father now, if my son decides ever to play college football or if he gets that opportunity to play on scholarship, I think I have my dinner already set. I think I have the questions already lined up because – I know a lot of guys in the NFL that said, oh, man, we had people do our papers for us. We had guys take these tests for us. We practiced all day. What do you mean you went to class? I'm like, boy, we went to class. What do you mean we went to class? So we didn't have that choice. And a lot of things came up. I had a chance to go to Detroit this week and speak to a lot of kids in Detroit with a young man named Stephen Stafford, a 13-year-old. Well, he's actually 15-year-old now. College junior here at Morehouse. And one thing that came up, Malcolm, is that a lot of the kids do not have this. We're not lucky enough, I would say, to have the support system that we had in our households. And that's why the responsibility. And I told the parents, you know, it's not our fault on all levels. Sometimes we're dealing with public systems. But at the end of the day, it's still our responsibility. You know, we come from the old school where it took a village to raise a child. Everybody on the block. Everybody on the block could give me a whooping if they saw me doing something bad when I was coming up.
For sure. And back that's the way it should be. That really is the way it should be. And it's interesting that you brought it back full circle and talking about educating not just our student-athletes and giving them the push they need to stay eligible and get to school, but educating the entire community because, trust me, there's going to be 85,000 people in the stands, but as you and I know, there's only 22 people on the field. So you do the math.
Exactly.
Right? Anybody who has an education and is bettering themselves is able to go to the game as a fan and enjoy what those gladiators are doing on Sundays. But you and I know the odds of you becoming one of those gladiators are a lot slimmer than you being one of the people who leases a suite at the same stadium. And that's the mentality we need to get to.
Exactly. I mean, you hit it right on the head, Malcolm. Now, tell us a little bit about what was the academic schedule like? What was the academic responsibility like at Notre Dame University?
You know, it was a rigorous academic schedule, but like I said, I was a late bloomer, and I was always that nerdy kid. Now, I've been big my whole life, but I wasn't necessarily the most athletic. So I was a spelling bee kid. I was a science fair kid. I was in the oratory contest. And for me, going to college was never something that I thought wasn't achievable. But going to college as a student athlete didn't become a reality until I was a senior in high school. So I went to a pretty rigorous academic school in D.C. I actually was in class with the Quayle kids. Ben Quayle was the vice president at the time. Couple congressmen had kids in school with me at Gonzaga in D.C. So the transition wasn't as great in the classroom. But the big thing for me was time management and understanding that even though you have tutors and you're supposed to be a study hall at this time, there's still a certain element that when you get on a college campus, and this is especially true for people who aren't students or who are not athletes, when you get on college campus, it really is the first step to the real world because it's on you to determine your day, to decide whether or not you're going to class, to decide whether or not you're going to study in advance of the final and not cram the night before, to decide whether or not you're going to write that paper 2 weeks early so you can get some revisions in with the TA, or you want to write it the night before and get a C-plus on it. And that was a big part of college for me that was so good because I had to work on my time management skills, and those are the skills that helped me the most in my job today. You know, just hopping on this call and scheduling this around meetings and meeting with my team at the bank and with clients, that's part of the time management that I had to hone when I was an undergrad, and I'm appreciative of the fact that I had to do it.
Right. And one of the things that you say hit it right on the head. If you're just joining us, I have Malcolm Johnson, NFL vet on the line now, Vice President of Bank of America Commercial Real Estate Group out in L.A. Give us a call at 1-888-346-9144. Time management, Malcolm. That, I can honestly say, is the most important thing I took away from my collegiate career. What a lot of people don't understand, you see the interviews of guys or kids on campus, and they're saying, oh, athletes are this, athletes are that. But they don't understand. We really don't have a life. They wonder why we party so hard in college when we get a chance. It's because that's probably the only time we'll be able to party all week long. They don't see us getting up at 5 a.m., When most college kids are coming in from a good night on campus. We're getting up at 5. We're going to the weight room. We're getting the strength coach is beating us up for an hour and a half. Yep. Then you get your little protein shake and you're walking to class sore at 8 a.m. Then you have to be up.
And in Madison and South Bend, you walk into class and it's about 25 degrees outside too.
And it's snow.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's snow.
And you got a leather jacket. You got a leather jacket with a hoodie underneath.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, we're there. We're in class from 8 to 1. Then you're right all over to practice. You're in a film session from 1 to 3. Then you're on the field, 3 to 6. Then you're in film session again after practice, 6 to 7. Then study hall, 7 to maybe 9:30. And that's if you don't have a meeting with your TA or your tutor. And then you're right back on to it again.
Let's not forget, if you're a Heisman Trophy candidate like Ron Dane, who you play with, or Ron Powers, who I play with, they have media requests every hour of the day. So they have to spend time with the sports information director for an hour and a half, 2 hours a day. ESPN Game Day is on campus. Kirk Herbstreit wants to talk to you. Never mind the fact that ESPN and Kirk Herbstreit and all those guys are getting a salary. Right? You
just exactly.
You try to squeeze this segment in. They charging advertisers dollars for the segment. Next up, we're going to feature Ron Dane, Heisman Trophy candidate. Now, you know, half the nation is going to tune in here what Ron Dane has to say. Ron Dane got to carve an hour and a half out of the day you just described that already is cut tight.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy. I can stay on that soapbox forever. You know?
Yeah. Is you know what, and this is definitely incredible, and that's what I speak to the kids about when I talk to them on Saturday as well. I said, you see me in a football uniform. I said, this suit now is now my new uniform. And what the guys don't understand is 80% of the time in the NFL and in college, especially in the NFL, we're in the classroom. We're in the classroom from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. most regular practice days, and only on the field for 2 hours. So
man,
the importance of education.
You would not believe how many of my colleagues and clients at the bank. You know, because now, like you said, my uniform is the same as yours, the pinstripe suit, the BlackBerry, the attaché case. But when they do happen to find out that once upon a time I was a pro athlete, it boggles their mind to hear that you showed up at the facility at 7:15 in the morning, looked at film, worked out, got treatment, looked at more film, had a meeting, got more treatment, ate, went on the field, looked at more film, got more treatment, then looked at some more film before you left. They
exactly.
cannot believe that people don't just show up on Sundays like they do for the flag football league.
It's crazy. It's a crazy situation.
You think Ray Lewis just shows up on Sundays and he knows exactly what keys to read and that's the part of it that the average fan is astonished to find out about, that you spend so much time in a classroom preparing for what you do for those 2.5 hours on Sundays.
I agree. Amen, brother. Listen, we're going to head to a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to tackle this new rookie symposium and a couple questions from our fans. Tune in, Life After the Game, Lamar Campbell, Malcolm Johnson. Stay tuned.
School to the pros, we cover everything. Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
We some hard hitters. We some hard hitters.
Hard Hitting Radio is a new kind of sports and entertainment show. Your hosts are NFL veterans Mark McMillan and co-host Byron Evans. It's an hour of hater-free radio every week. You'll hear interviews with top athletes, celebrities, coaches, and fans. It's humor, hits, and conversation. Hard Hitting Radio is on with McMillan and Evans. Listen Fridays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Network. Tired of the same mundane talk radio show, boring opinions, and people not knowing or telling the truth? Tune into The Sports Life with Josh and Otis. This show is brought to you by two men who know the good, the bad, and the ugly of professional sports. Josh and Otis's experience and careers in the NFL give them access to the inside information and a reason to have a candid opinion. Tune into the Voice America Sports Channel Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific. The Sports Life with Josh and Otis. It's more than sports talk. It's a way of life.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
You are tuned in to Life After the Game with your host, Lamar Campbell. If you wish to ask a question of Lamar or his guest, please call 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. Or you can send an email to lamar@lifeafterthegame.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Life After the Game. I'm your host, Lamar Campbell. My very special guest, Mr. Malcolm Johnson. Definitely want to take a chance to give a complete and utterly respectful shout out to all the kids in Detroit, Michigan listening today. I've definitely had a great time visiting with all of you on Friday as I was back in Detroit. And I hope you guys are definitely putting your ear to the radio and listening about the importance of education that Malcolm and myself are speaking on today. So if you didn't believe me, now I have somebody backing me up on the importance of education. And not only that, how hard the life of a college football or athlete is. And it's funny you mentioned that, Malcolm. With everything going on in Ohio State, you know, shout out to Ohio State. Sorry you guys got caught. I'm a Badger, so the Big Ten may be ours now. So, okay, that's being said. Let's go ahead to what they're speaking on is paying, and paying college athletes. Paying college athletes. Now, you at a prestigious – I mean, you guys are touchdown Jesus. You guys have the ABC contract up there at Notre Dame. And I know as myself, as a former player at the University of Wisconsin, when I couldn't even eat. Now, even academic scholarships get a stipend.
Right.
Academic scholarships get a stipend at universities. We just get the books. And don't get me wrong, a scholarship is a great thing. We definitely earned it, but you still have to live. And let's be honest, Malcolm, a lot of guys come from underprivileged backgrounds. So right. They're not coming to school with a lot of money. They actually need some help. And the Big Ten, love the Big Ten, think we're the first to bring up paying college players. How do you think if they did start paying college players, how that would affect not only the game, but would guys pay attention? Do you think guys would actually pay more attention to the academics? Or do you think that would be a deterrent from guys paying attention to academics if they were getting paid?
You know, one of the things that, and my namesake is Malcolm X, and my dad, or my, as you might be able to guess, but my dad would play Malcolm X records, and one of the famous quotes I remember him talking about, and this was in relation to the Civil Rights Movement, but he said, just because the rooster's not crowing no more, don't mean the sun gonna go back down. So if we not we stop talking about paying these players, that doesn't mean that the issue is not going to be there, because I think that's what a lot of people want to do, is to is to sweep this under the rug. And if you did stop paying players, it would be a game changer. It would be a game changer, and the players have to be paid, period. There's billions of dollars, billions with the B, capital B-I-L-L-I-O-N-S, billions of dollars being spent and made on college football, college basketball, every year by entities from television to corporations to the NCAA itself, to the university, and the only people receiving none of that pie are the players. So in order to pay these guys, you're going to have to change the landscape. And what I mean is there's going to be haves and have-nots. And that might be all right. That might be all right for an Ohio State, a USC, a Tennessee, a Florida State to say, yep, we're willing to pay our players. We want to cut them a piece of this pie because we make too much money from college athletics to let it go away. And then you know what? The university is like a and I'm just naming names, and this is completely hypothetical, but the university don't want to participate. A Vanderbilt, a Duke, an Oregon State, and I'm just naming universities that may not have the ability to compete. When you get into an SEC situation, do you expect Vanderbilt to be able to pay their starting quarterback the same thing that Tennessee can? Absolutely not. So maybe Vanderbilt says, well, you know what, we'll offer scholarships, and that's it. And we're going to compete on a different level. We're not going to play the Tennessees of the world. We're not going to play the Ohio States of the world because we don't pay our players. And we have true student-athletes. But if you do want to be a big-time student-athlete in a program that generates billions of dollars, you go to one of these schools. Maybe it'll be 25 schools that survive. Maybe it'll be 50 that pay their players. And that's where you go if you want to go to school and get paid while you do it. But if you're just interested in getting a good education, you're not necessarily going to play on television every week, but you're going to play a high level of football, then this is where you go. And there's a completely different level. But if every school is benefiting from these dollars, then every school should be paying their players. If some school says, I don't want to pay my players, fine. I'm out of the TV contract then.
Right.
Outside of the billions of dollars that you're able to be able to get every year from BCS games, if you decide that you don't want to pay your players, I think that's the way the system has to work. You give these schools a chance to participate in a capitalist society that everybody else in America already gets to participate in. And if they don't want to, then they have to compete on a different tier.
Right, and I agree with you 100%. You know, every situation is going to be where you make it. So a lot of these guys can go to the universities that have the cap to pay you, and you can still get an education out of it if that's where your mindset is. And I remember walking on campus one day, cold day in Madison, of course, as it mostly was most of the year, and walking past a sports store and seeing my jersey. I go into the sports store. Now, I'm hype. You know, I'm a sophomore. You're selling my jersey on campus. I'm excited. I go into the store. I say, hey, that's my jersey. Hey, Soup, how you doing? Great to see you. That'll be
$75. For sure.
That was my wake-up call to the NCAA. That was my wake-up call. I'm like, so you're telling me you're selling my jersey. Nice big 38. I'm going to run down the field. I'm going to see everybody out there with 38 on, and you're going to give me a Gatorade and a box lunch after the game and say thank
you. And a high five.
You know? And
a high five. Good game. Good game, Lamar. Go get them next week.
Yeah, go get, you know, and go get them next week. I agree with you 100%. You know, we're going to – I digress. I can go on for the NCAA. I may have an NCAA show because I can go off on the NCAA for weeks on weeks on weeks. Just the past incident with the BCS, with him only being fined $1 million. Are you sure? They fined this man $1 million. The NCAA, I'm sorry. Thank you for the scholarship, but you need to play your players. You need to pay these guys. These guys, they would stay out of a lot of trouble. And the funny thing is that we had off-season jobs in the summertime. Yep. That was the only time that we could work, were those summer schedules. And yeah, they were a good job. But if I had the opportunity on top of that schedule with the work ethic that a lot of the guys have, I still would have worked, even with that schedule, if I could have found a way. So it's not like guys aren't willing to work for money. It's not like every guy in the NCAA or every female in the NCAA is out looking for a handout. We're working for our scholarship, but at least give us the same opportunity as a regular student to work. And if we're going to fund the football team, because let's be honest, at the bigger universities, if you're lucky enough to have a successful football and basketball team, you're pretty much funding all the other sports. At the University of Wisconsin, at the time that I was there, it was football. period. We had Mike Finley for a couple of years. Mike brought some ticket sales in for basketball, but it was Badgers, Badgers, Badgers. All the new libraries being built, football money. Oh, so, the new Jones being built.
That's forgiven. And in and of itself, there's actually nothing wrong with that, but it's very difficult for you to insist that everyone who plays on that football team maintain their amateur status when there are people and entities that are benefiting to the tune of billions of dollars from what you built. That's all. I just want those student athletes to have the same opportunity
as everyone else.
Being a capitalist that everybody else in this country has. That's it. No more, no less.
No more, no less. And it's funny, you know, when I think it was PlayStation back in the day, we couldn't wait for college football to come out so we could see a likeness of our face or our jersey number on college football. And you couldn't wait to see how fast they made you or how strong they made you. Were you 80%? I got mad. I'm like 89% speed. I'm faster than 89%. and not thinking that 19, 20 years old that this game costs $40. You're using my likeness. You're using my number. All around the NCAA, every college university, and these guys are getting a piece of it and then getting in trouble when I understand the atmosphere of college football, and I'm not condoning what the Ohio State players did, but I understand.
Absolutely. You know, the good thing, Lamar, it's a two-way street. Okay, it's a two-way street. Okay. You and I play with guys like this. They're in college not to get an education. They're in college because they couldn't go to the NFL right out of high school. Period. And you know what? If you're in college and you have already said, I'm just in the minor league for the pros, all I'm here to do is get paid, this decision you made. That's not a smart one. That's not something I would espouse. But there's nothing you're going to be able to tell somebody who's over the legal age when he decides, I don't want to get an education in the books. I'm here to become the best cornerback I can, and I'm going to play for 12 years in the NFL. But the guy who would, if given the opportunity, actually learn something about a career in finance, real estate, but absolutely doesn't have that opportunity presented to him, that's the guy that I'm looking out for. That's the student-athlete who could benefit from a different system, period.
Right, exactly, Malcolm. And you hit it right on the head. You know, it's so many ways that the NCAA can be fixed. And until someone steps in, I believe myself, to fix it. Because right now, they're untouchable. I think the NCAA governs themselves. So they slap some universities on the wrist. They definitely just plucked themselves with the million-dollar fine that the gentleman got for the BCS scandal. No telling what really happened if I could have been a fly on the wall when those talks were going on. And now, even down to the scholastic level, are you serious? The BCS unanimously decided to strip U.S. Reggie Bush of the Heisman Trophy, and now it's even gone as back as OU to get the title. You look at these guys. The NCAA knows better. The NCAA, for all of the fines, for all the things that they do as far as fining gentlemen on the field, then have an NCAA guy on every campus if you want to keep it clean. We know what's going on. If you want to stop it from going on, then invest some of that billion-dollar industry that you're getting every year into making sure that you keep the game clean when the NCAA itself can't even police itself on most instances.
Yeah, so that's a whole, like you said, that's a whole other show. And the whole system needs to be changed, though, because every institution right now benefits from the system as it is. And so it's going to be very difficult for you to tell somebody, you know what, the rooster stopped crowing, but the sun is going to go to absolutely not. They're not going to give back any of the money they're receiving. Right now, the 11th place team in the Big Ten is receiving a share of that BCS money that the first place team gets. And so the 11th place team has every reason to keep the system in place. What needs to happen is you got to say, we're going to stop paying players, period.
Right.
Ohio State, you made $6 million free cash flow last year. Wisconsin, you made $8 million free cash flow last year. You're going to pay your players 35% of that, period. Salaries are going to the players 35% of what you grossed last year. And you know what, Vanderbilt? You know what, Indiana, Purdue? If you can't afford it, then you need to go to a different level. You don't get to participate in the upside and not pay your players. And that's going to be the change. I really think that that's something that needs to be studied. Because otherwise, there's no incentive for the lower tier schools to say why should I participate? I'm receiving money. We didn't even go to the BCS, and the top tier schools, they go to the BCS plus they get additional sponsorship dollars because they are the top tier schools. They don't have any reason to want to change the system. Somebody's right. Gonna have to come in and say this is ridiculous. We have too many Terrell Pryors, too many Reggie Bushes, too many, and I don't want to pick on those guys. I absolutely right. not picking on Terrell Pryor, or Reggie Bush specifically, but we got too many of these types of situations. It's become too embarrassing, and we have to make a change. But I don't know who that governing body is going to be, because, like you said, right now the NCAA is the judge and the jury.
Exactly. And I'm going to do my best to get those guys on the show. We're getting ready to take a commercial break. But when we come back, Malcolm and myself, we're going to tackle the NFL Rookie Symposium and the education programs. Life After the Game. Stay tuned.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Are you ready for an old school in-your-face discussion of professional, college, and high school football? Tune in for talk on a variety of football-related topics on the program From Under the Helmet with Derek Kennard. You will hear the week's headlines and straight talk from the hosts and weekly guests that are personal and provocative. From Under the Helmet is broadcast every Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Take us on the go. It's even easier now. The Voice America Talk Radio Network has launched our mobile app for iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry. Visit the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market to download the app powered by Aircast. It's free and no registration is necessary. In minutes, you could be enjoying your favorite Voice America Talk Radio host, no matter where you are. In the car, out and about, while traveling, or anytime you can't be close to your computer. Catch up on the archives you've missed or discover new shows on the spot. Search Voice America at your favorite app store. It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
You are tuned in to Life After the Game with your host, Lamar Campbell. If you wish to ask a question of Lamar or his guest, please call 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. Or you can send an email to lamar@lifeafterthegame.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Life After the Game. I'm your host, Lamar Campbell. My very special guest, Mr. Malcolm Johnson. So we're going on our NCAA tirade last segment, but we definitely want to take the time to definitely discuss the canceled rookie symposium by the NFL and the new rookie symposium imposed by the NFLPA, which they are calling the Business of Football Rookie Edition. Now, Malcolm, I was an undrafted player when I came into the league, so I never had the opportunity to go to the NFL Rookie Symposium. As you being a high-round draft pick, tell us a little bit about what the symposium taught you and what did you learn from it?
You know, it's interesting because I was at the symposium, but just by the skin of my teeth, I was a fifth-round pick, so it wasn't too many slots available in the draft when I finally did hear my name called. But I was able to get to that rookie symposium in 1999, and the thing I remember the most, and it's only a three-day session, but I remember Chris Carter, who was actually an active player at the time, but he was a speaker at the symposium, and he said, everybody, I want you to look to your left and look to your right. One of you is not going to be here this time next year. Meaning one of these three people is going to be out of the league this time next year. And, of course, everybody looked to their left, looked to their right. So I know I'm here, so it must be the guy on my left. Right. It must be the guy on my right. And sure enough, 4 years later, I was out of the league. And that was one of the most important lessons I took. because I knew I was already climbing an uphill battle. I knew that I was not one of the guys on the team who was definitely going to be on the roster, and that was the most important thing for me. I didn't know anything about investing, even though I was a business major. I didn't know a ton about cash management, but I knew enough to know you can't spend more than you make.
Right.
And you can't start spending even up to your means until you show that you're going to be here for a minute. So my main thing was just being a saver. The thing I took away from that symposium was you have to prepare as if this thing could end tomorrow, because one day tomorrow will definitely come. And that's not something I would espouse to anyone, that just take all your money and put it in a savings account at age 21. But when you don't know anything about anything, and you haven't had an opportunity like you did, Lamar, to go to the program at Wharton and understand how to invest your money and make it grow or potentially own a business or start a business, sometimes the best thing you can do is go arm yourself with additional knowledge and make sure you're preserving the money you got. And that was one of the most important lessons I took from the symposium.
And, you know, that's awesome. If you're just joining us, I have my guest, Malcolm Johnson, NFL vet now, Vice President of Bank of America, Merrill Lynch Real Estate Group out in Los Angeles. And you hit it right on the head. It's just to continuously educate yourself. I told a little story earlier in the first segment, Malcolm, where I did not have a chance to go to the rookie symposium. So my symposium was actually my first year with Detroit as an undrafted free agent. And it kind of goes full circle to how we had the support system back when we were young, when we were making the decision to go to our respective universities, is that I was blessed with a very friendly locker room. I had veterans who had established themselves in the business world, a Mark Carrier, a Herman Moore, a Barry Sanders, Robert Porche. Guys were cool enough to say, hey, Rook, you're not going to be here forever. Spend your money right. Make sure you invest in the right things. Watch who you trust. Watch where you put your money, you know. So those were the lessons that I learned, and I only played my career with the Lions. But what I realized after I retired is that not all locker rooms are that close. Right. A lot of guys didn't get that information from a lot of locker rooms, and that's something that really surprised me because with Detroit being the only team that I played for, I didn't know other locker rooms existed where guys actually weren't cool with each other or didn't pass along that information. And as we mentioned, with the current NFL lockout, we're 86 days in. There are very, very important programs that are not being sponsored right now by the NFL that could actually change someone's life. As I mentioned earlier, me and you had a chance to meet at the Wharton program. And for all the listeners that do not know, the NFL sponsors a program, a secondary education program at prestigious Ivy League universities such as Wharton, Harvard, Stanford University, and actually last year at Georgia Tech University as well. This is a program that actually changed my life when I had an opportunity to visit this program. And my real estate business has not been the same since. It has grown. I was a steady sponge. I still reach out to the professors that I was taught by when I was at the Wharton program. But not everybody can get into a Carnegie Mellon. tell us a little bit about your Carnegie Mellon experience.
You know, again, I was a guy who was not sure how long I was going to play in the National Football League. So I was always preparing for the end before it actually came. And when that day did come, you know, I turned my retirement papers in 2003. I was fortunate in that I didn't have to go do something the next day. I could figure out what I wanted to do. And I spent the first 6 months of my post-NFL career actually working at the University of Pittsburgh in the athletic department. So for me, that was an easy segue into the business world, Lamar. I was able to work every day, you know, be in a professional environment, but I was still working in the business of sports. But pretty soon into that, I realized a guy who played in the NFL, played at Notre Dame, I can always find a career in sports if this is what I want to do. But I have no idea what else is out there in investment banking, in accounting. Mm-hmm. What does management consulting mean? What about brand management? And so, again, that's when I decided, like you did in your post-plan days, when you opted to attend the program at Wharton, I said the best way for me to learn about these things is to invest in myself by gaining more knowledge. And I said I'm going to apply to the most challenging MBA programs I can, and I'm going to prepare myself like I'm preparing for the NFL draft, which meant studying for the GMAT on my own, intense tutoring sessions, making sure I knew exactly what it took to get where I wanted to be in terms of business school. And thankfully, Carnegie Mellon was the perfect fit for me. I didn't have to move. Top 15 program right in my backyard in Pittsburgh. The program itself was focused on quantitative business skills. So okay. I had a business background as an undergrad at Notre Dame, but mm-hmm. in the 4 years that I played pro football, the world had exploded in terms of technology. Things looked so much different in 2003 than they did in 1998 when I graduated from college that I actually needed to go back to school and enhance that skill set. So Carnegie Mellon allowed me that piece. And after Carnegie Mellon, I figured out that I wanted to be in the world of finance, but that was definitely the stepping stone I needed, and it's the best decision I could have made.
That's a wonderful point, because no matter how long your NFL career is, you have to understand that, and I tell guys this a lot, that that's all we know for so long. And we're so caught up in the NFL where, like, as you said, when you got out of the NFL, so much had changed that you felt like you had to go back and re-educate yourself just to catch up. So you put on your resume, you go in there, and sometimes, you know, they're looked at as, okay, you're just coming from the NFL, and, you know, what else do you have to offer? Yeah, you got this education, you got it 5 years ago, you have no experience in this particular, you have no experience in this particular field. We can tell some football stories, but I don't think this position is for you. So it's in some ways, Malcolm, I try to tell guys, you know, it's somewhat mandatory. You know, a lot of us aren't that 1% that's going to be on a Wheaties box, that's going to have a lot of endorsement deals waiting for us after we retire. And if you pay and if you play 7 or 8 years and you major in marketing or finance or whatnot, you may have to re-educate yourself. The
world has changed. You have to sharpen your pen, your pencil again, because the tools have changed. In the 8 years that you've been out there catching touchdown passes, Twitter did not exist. If you were a marketing major, Brett Favre could have been any major. But if he was a marketing major, obviously he needs some. We know with Brett Favre and the whole tweeting photographs of himself, he needs to understand that the world has changed technologically. But yeah, the world is constantly evolving, and you have to make that investment in yourself if you want to be relevant in the real world. After
you definitely do. You definitely do, Malcolm. Well, listen, Malcolm, we have about 30 seconds left. I really want to thank you for coming on the show today. I think you coming on the show has been an education not only for myself, but for all our listeners. Keep doing what you do out there in L.A., brother, and I would love to have you back on the show soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Lamar, and definitely don't hesitate to reach out to me again. I'd love to do this whenever we can.
All right. Thanks, Malcolm. You have a good one, buddy.
All right. Be good, brother.
All right. That was Malcolm Johnson, NFL vet, this week on Life After the Game. Make sure you tune in next week where we have our special Father's Day roundtable with some of your favorite NFL dads. I'm your host, Lamar Campbell. Always have the perfect state of mind for success, and tune in next week.
Thanks again for joining Lamar Campbell for Life After the Game. Be sure to listen to our program every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Channel. May the coming week be one of greatness in your life.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.